Harechilos Lashon Hara. The next example of Averis that are Bein Adam Lechavero and are serious Averis that people don't realize how complex they are and how many subtles they are. That's Rechilos and Lashon Hara. Okay. Kvar Chomro Noda V'Godol Anofav Ki Rabu Ma'od. It's known that Lashon Hara and Rechilos, we'll discuss in 1 second what they are. I'm not going to go through the whole Sefer Chofetz Chaim, but we're going to explain at least what the seriousness of Lashon Hara is, how it works, and what is considered Lashon Hara and Rechilos in general. Hechi Domi Avak, Lashon Hara has the main Lashon Hara. The Gemara says, or the Rambam says really, that there are three kinds of Bali Lashon Hara. There's people who, what's it called, who speak Lashon Hara sometimes, you know, just like people sometimes do Averis. And that's terrible, it's terrible Avera, but the person himself doesn't necessarily become possible because he once in a while speaks Lashon Hara, just like he once in a while does other Averis. But then there's a Baal Lashon Hara, a person who does this constantly. He's like, that's his profession, to spread rumors, to speak badly about people. That's a much worse kind of thing. Then there's Rechilos. Rechilos is where a person goes and peddles information from one person to another. Did you hear what this one said about you, or that one said about you, or whatever? That's not just publicizing negative things about people. That's Lashon Hara. But it's peddling information, this one said about this one or whatever, and causing very, very bad consequences where three people are affected. The person who speaks it is affected and gets punished. The person who's spoken about and the person spoken to also get involved and end up having fights or sina or whatever, and everybody's affected, and they're affecting three people. That's Rechilos. And again, Lashon Hara is just telling one another person something bad about a third person that nothing to do with him, just interesting information. And that's basically Lashon Hara. And there's a Baal Lashon Hara. I always like to explain that based on this idea that there's a Baal Lashon Hara and there's people who stam speak Lashon Hara, there's also Lashon Hara that's not Lashon Hara. That's a mitzvah to say negative about somebody if it could cause somebody harm and they need to know to protect themselves. Then that's called Lashon Hara L'Toelis. And there are conditions how you're allowed to say that. For instance, somebody wants to go into business with somebody, and you know the guy's a ganav. You know for sure, not that you heard about it, or you know a rumor. You know for sure the guy has cheated other people or whatever, and you know it for a fact. You were the one who was cheated. You know for a fact he cheated you. No shiloh. So then, if you know for sure, from first-hand information, right, that the facts are true, you don't exaggerate, you don't say it with animosity because you don't like the person, but you say it objectively, you can control all of those conditions, then not only isn't there an issur to say it, there's a mitzvah to say it. Same thing goes with shiduchim. You have information about somebody, what's it called, that they're sick, mentally ill, or whatever. They look okay, but you know for sure they're mentally ill. Okay? You're their doctor, and you prescribe their medicine. Okay, this is another problem with doctors revealing thing, but let's say that would be a problem. You know for sure, what's it called? You're their druggist, and you sell them, but they, you know they take it, and they're really completely insane. And if they don't take this medicine, they go berserk, and they could kill somebody. Okay? So really serious things. And you know it firsthand information. You're not exaggerating. You're not saying it with animosity. And there's definitely a toelis. This person wants a married person. They maybe end up getting killed because the person's a maniac. So there's a mitzvah to say something. To let the person know, right? Now that person's not allowed to believe you 100%. They're allowed to take it to heart. And maybe not make the shidduch, or maybe not make the partnership in business, or at least to investigate it. There's no lashon hara involved over there, because that's a toelus. There's a benefit, and you're doing it with all the conditions of telling over beneficial information. With that, I want to always explain the Gemara in two places says how to avoid hearing lashon hara. And they seem to be, one of them seems to be extraneous. The Gemara in Ksuba says, why is a person's fingers tapered at the end? So in case you're going to hear lashon hara, you can put your fingers in your ears as earplugs so you won't hear the lashon hara. Then the Gemara says in another place, why is the, the earlobe flexible? Right? In order, in case you'll hear lashon hara, you can fold your earlobes into your ears. Okay. So always bothered me. First of all, right, hear lashon hara, there's a much easier etzah. Walk away. Take your feet and walk. Don't stand there with your fingers in your ears like an idiot, or with your earlobes like this. Walk away. So you could say, okay, there's a situation where you can't walk away. Right? Chofetz Chaim speaks about a situation, if you walk away, you look like a fool. But I think you look more like a fool if you put your heads in your ears or whatever. So that can't be the scenario. Or you just push, you can't walk away. You're somewhere with somebody, there's nowhere to walk away to. Right, and you're on the observation tower of the Empire State Building, and there's no place to walk away to, and that's it, you're stuck there. Right, and the person's talking. Or you're in the car, right, and you're the driver, and the guy's sitting next to you, talking to you. Can't walk away. Well, you can't put your fingers in yours either if you're driving. You're a passenger. Okay, in any case. Could be. But l'chora, in most cases, what do you need fingers and earlobes? Walk away. Secondly, earlobes can only work for somebody who has fingers. Because if you don't have fingers, it's impossible. I mean, maybe some people can make their earlobes wiggle, but it's impossible to make your earlobes curve and go into your ear. Nobody can do that. Okay, so you have to use your fingers. So if you have fingers already, stick them in your ear. What do you need earlobes for? So therefore, I'd like to say the following. I don't know if it's the pshat, but it's a nice idea, I think. First is like this. There are people, like we said, who are ba'alei lashon hara. They are really through and through miserable people who you shouldn't have anything to do with, because they are cool, calculated, mongers, gossip mongers. That's what they're called. Gossipers. Shouldn't have anything to do with them. With those people, you use your feet. Get away from them. And let them know they are not the kind of people you would want to associate with. Till they'll do tshuva, they'll change their ways. They are not people you should have any association with, because they're evil people. And evil people you shouldn't be around. Most people are not like that. Most people are not evil people. They just do things wrong every once in a while. They're nice people who do things wrong. All of us are nice people who do things wrong. So if you walk away from a person like that who's speaking lashon hara, you're giving them the impression that they're not nice people and that you can't have anything to do with them. It's not true. So that body language would be inappropriate. Again, all of this is just not lemaisa. We're talking about now theoretical, conceptually. Okay. So walking away from those people means that you disassociate yourself from them completely. That's not proper. Because if you disassociate yourself completely from anybody who does something wrong, then you probably have to disassociate yourself from yourself, which is very difficult. And also, you couldn't have any connection to anybody. So that's absurd. Therefore,
there's a disorder like that.
We do, huh?
There's a disorder like that.
I hear, okay.
Disassociative disorder,
actually. Okay. Tell it to my other self. In any case, so there are there are people that you can't walk away from. Literally, conceptually. But how do you let them know they're doing something wrong? That's what the fingers are. Take your fingers, put them in your ear, stand there and say, look, you're basically a nice guy and I don't want to totally disassociate myself with you, so I'm staying here. What you're doing right now is wrong. I can't have a connection to what you're doing right now, so I'm sticking my fingers in my ears and letting you know that this is inappropriate. When you'll stop speaking the inappropriate thing, I'll take my fingers out of the ears and I'll be here. I'm not totally separating myself from you, but I'm separating myself from what you're doing right now. Then there's the third thing, the earlobes. You're walking down the street with somebody, and you have a daughter that is in Shidduchim, and the other person is just your friend. He has no daughters at all, okay, or sons, whatever. He has no, everybody, all his kids are married. And somebody suggested a certain guy as a Shidduch, and you want to know information about him. And up comes a person who you know knows information about this person. That happens to be that the person you meet has negative information about this guy, right? He is a, a wife beater, wife killer. He's already killed 7 wives beforehand, and wouldn't be a good idea if your daughter married him and she becomes number 8. Okay, so he really knows really terrible things about this person firsthand, right? And you ask him, what do you know about so-and-so? They suggested him from my daughter. Now, the guy has a dilemma. He knows really terrible things, but it's lashon hara. Okay. Now, if my friend, who has no daughters, couldn't care less if this guy murdered people, beats people, or whatever, he's never going to come to, going to be a problem to him. He only beats wives and murders wives. He's never going to be his wife. So he has no reason to hear this. It's not a toelis for him. If he stands there and puts his fingers in his ears, the other guy's going to get the message, hey, this is lashon hara. So he's not going to say anything. And the woman will marry this guy and be his 8th korban. So therefore, the person can't put his fingers in his ears. He has to take his earlobes and bend them in. Why? Because the Gemara says, what is the purpose of this part of the ear? The earlobe and the outer ear. The purpose of the outer ear is to direct the sound to you. It's like funnel. A funnel that gathers the liquid so you can put it and direct it. So this ear, outer ear, is a funnel. It catches the sound and brings it to you. Okay? I just want to explain, that's why on an Eved Ivri who stole and was sold because he couldn't pay what he stole, or he sold himself as a slave and ignored the fact that God said that you're not supposed to be slaves to other people. So we pierce his ear, the ear that heard on Har Sinai, that what's it called, that you shouldn't steal, or you shouldn't sell yourself as a slave. And he went and did it, let his ear be pierced. So it always bothered me, this part of the ear that you pierce doesn't hear anything. It's a piece of cartilage. The inner ear is what heard. So pierce his inner ear. Right? Pierce his earlobe. Well, the idea is he heard it, but he didn't know God's talking to him. Right? Yeah, I heard it. But me? Doesn't mean me. It means somebody else. A lot of people hear that. Right? You mean him, not me. So which part of the ear was defective? Not the inner ear. He heard, but you know he's talking to me. When I was much younger and naive, and I was intimidated by some of my balabatim, which doesn't happen anymore since I'm much older than most of the balabatim. So, I had doctors, lawyers, supposedly chashuva people. They were older than me. And if I had to tell them off, I really felt intimidated. Now I tell everybody off, whatever the difference. Then I felt intimidated. So what I used to do is put it in my drasha. Right? My drushes were much longer and much more fire and brimstone in those days. So if I had something to tell a lawyer that he did something wrong or he was doing something in the kehillah that was wrong, so I put it into my drasha. Not, hey, you over there, what's it called? That I didn't do. That, but I made it clear that this is something wrong, and I figured the guy would get the message for sure, because it was obvious that, but nobody else necessarily got the message, that it was talking about him. And I figured that's the way I'll be yotze, giving the guy mussar, by doing it, by not saying his name, and he'll get the message. Inevitably, I learned very quickly, it doesn't work. inevitably, after giving a drush like that, I remember one specific lawyer really did something really not nice, right, and that was known in the Kehila or whatever, and I wanted to get the message across to him, and I masked it enough that it wasn't specifically that thing, but he's smart enough to get the message, I figured. And people came over to say good Shabbos, and I see this guy smiling from ear to ear. He comes over to me, and he says, "Rabbi, I hope the person who needed that message got it, because you really gave it to him." I think it to myself, I'm sure he did, that was you. And inevitably, time after time, that's what happened. The people who needed it came to me and told me, "You really gave it to them." And they never realized it was them. So I stopped doing that completely. I figured that doesn't help. In any case, one time, I had a woman who was mamish the opposite. I was years ago in South Africa. And there, on a Tuesday morning shiur, about 350 ladies showed up. Not because I was so popular, because I had nothing else to do. Because they went to shiurim constantly, right? No matter who was giving it, because they each had in their live-in maids in their home who took care of everything they could possibly need to be taken care of, right? And they for almost nothing. These maids were married. They lived come out the whole week by these people, and their husbands lived in shanty towns by themselves. It was a great family. Family organization over there for the blacks. But in any case, so everybody had at least three or four maids. At least. So the women had mamish nothing to do. So if there was a shiur, this was through Or Sameach, 350 ladies showed up in the morning, like no problem. There's nothing else to do, and they have the one took care of the kids, one did the dishes, one cleaned the house. The mamish had nothing to do. So there's 350 ladies there. And I was speaking about tznius. And I mentioned a certain kind of dress that you may think fits the criteria of tznius, but it's not tzadua. And I mentioned it. Next thing I know, they're passing up a note to the front. So I get the note, and I open it up, and it says, "Dear Rabbi Lev, I know that you were talking about me. I want to apologize. I usually don't wear a dress like this, but I was in a rush to get to your shiur. I took the first thing available. I promise you I won't do it again." That was a note said. Now, I tell you the truth, I didn't know anybody in that audience. I surely didn't come there with the intention of speaking to this woman, you know, and giving it to her in this drush. Thirdly, I didn't even know what the women were wearing. I promise you, I did not, you know, look every woman up and down when they came in to see what they were wearing. So I had no idea, you know, who this woman was, what she was wearing. I was just speaking in the air. But this woman took it like meant her. That's the only time that I said something generic and somebody thought I was talking about them. Most of the time when I'm speaking about people, they take it that I'm talking about somebody else. And I always like to say, that was the problem with Kayim. The Ibn Ezra says, the Torah says that the Rabban Shem gave Kayim Musar. That after his korban wasn't accepted, so he was upset. He thought that he wasn't accepted because Hevel was accepted, and it was on his expense that Hevel's korban was accepted. He was mad at his brother. So Rabban Shem said, "Don't be mad at him. Right? If you'll do better, I'll accept your korban too. It's not you or him. And therefore, don't be upset that you know, I favored him over you. It's nothing to do with that. Something wrong with you. You'll do tshuva. Everything will be okay." First Musar Shmuz in history. Right after that, the Torah says, "Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv." Kain said something to his brother Hevel. And "Vayi biyosem basoda." Then where they're in the field, Kain killed Hevel. So the obvious problem here, the Torah doesn't tell us what Kain said to Hevel that eventually led him to kill him. So there are plenty of Midrashim that they started to fight. After this episode, Kain said to Hevel, according to the Midrash, "Let's split up the world. You know, father's not going to live forever, and we're going to get the Yerusha. There's only two of us. We got the whole world. I'll take the movable property. You take the real estate," or vice versa. Or they were fighting, who's going to get Eretz Yisrael and the Mokum HaMikdash, who's going to get the rest of the world. And then they started to fight. Okay, if I'm going to get the movable property, right, then you're going to get the real estate, so you're not going to be able to use any of my movable property. And the other one said, well, get your movable property off my real estate. So they started fighting already over the Yerusha, who's going to get the Beis HaMikdash, who's going to get the rest of the world, whatever. And then, because of the fight, Cain eventually killed Hevel. Makes sense. But what's the simple meaning of the pasuk? The pasuk doesn't tell me what he said. There must have been something obvious, not you need medrashim for. So the Ibn Ezra says that Cain told Hevel what God just told him. He told him over the Musar that God gave him. But the only problem is, and it doesn't make sense, the continuation. If Cain told Hevel the Musar that God told him, why would that be a reason that later on he should kill him? Just the opposite. Should be a reason not to kill him. I understand if he told him something that started up a whole argument that they could come to kill. But if he told him over the Musar that he told him, why would that bring him to kill him? Now the answer is exactly that point. If Cain had listened to the Musar and said, God means me, and he would have thought about it and taken it to heart, everything would have been fine. But Cain heard the Musar and he said, obviously I don't need that. Right? It's great Musar, but probably not my parents don't need it. Probably Hevel needs it, and God told me such. He told him over to him. So he told the Musar over to Hevel, saying, God told me this interesting thing. I surely don't need it, but you probably could use it because it really applies to you. Since he ignored it for himself, and he told it over to Hevel, right? God meant you, right? Gave it to them. So then he didn't take it to heart, and mainly ended up killing Hevel. So, therefore, we pierced this port of the ear because he heard it, but he didn't hear he's talking to him. Okay, now, if that's the case, so let's go back to the guy walking down the street, and he says to the guy, you know anything about so-and-so? They suggested her for my daughter. The guy knows he is a wife-beater, wife-murderer, whatever. So if he sees the other guy standing with his fingers in his ear, he's not going to say anything. I don't want to say it wasn't her. But if he sees the guy holding his earlobes in, he's going to say, oh, this is only Lashon Hara to him because he doesn't need to know about this information. But this guy has a daughter who may end up marrying this guy, and that would be her death sentence. So for him, it's a toelis. So I'm going to say it to him, and this guy's not going to listen because it's not relevant to him. So if he puts his fingers in his ear, he'd be giving the impression that it's Lashon Hara, don't say it. He puts his earlobes, he's given the impression it's not Lashon Hara, it's only Lashon Hara for me. So say it to him, because he has to hear it. Yeah?
Can I ask a question about Rachilis?
About?
Rachilis.
Yes and no, and let me see, because we're going to go into it, so it may be premature.
Whatever you want.
Let me hear the question.
So I walk up to Moshe, and I say to Moshe, I want to rent your apartment. And Moshe says, I'm not renting my apartment to you, because Shmuel told me that you're a thief. What is my obligation? After I've just heard that.
Your obligation?
I mean, what usually a person would do is go over to Shmuel and say, what are you telling him I'm a thief for? But are you allowed to do that?
We'll get to the halachas of a little bit of them in Lashon Hara Rechilas, and then I'll answer. Okay? In other words, maybe now you're over on Rechilas by telling... what's it called? Shimon, that Reuven said that he's a thief. That he said that I'm a thief.
Right.
I will see. Any other? Yeah.
If not so many people know this, that you're supposed to do that. So if you do it to someone, you know.
No, we're not talking about doing it really.
Oh, okay. No.
Don't go tomorrow and send a Milovich Medrash with your earlobe, or your fingers in your ear. Right. We're talking conceptually. It's all. It doesn't mean literally. Right. It means that there's ways of reacting to Lashon Hara differently, where you'll give over the impression. Right, the Gemara just says it in that way. Right, it could be that. What?
So why do we literally have our ears?
Yeah, okay, because they are possible to do that, and you can learn the lesson from that too. It could be that there are times when the only way you can avoid it is by putting your fingers in your ears or your earlobes. But on a normal basis, there are other ways of avoiding Lashon Hara that you shouldn't stand there and look like a meshugana with your fingers in your ears. Okay, so that is just the three different kinds of Lashon Hara and the way to protect yourself from them. there are Mamori Chazal that make Lashon Hara the worst Aveira. For instance, the Gemara says that there are many things that a person is Ochel Peroseim Bolam Azev Akeren Kayem Salam Baba. Right? But Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. The greatest mitzvah of all the Gemilas Chasodim that you could do or whatever is Talmud Torah, which we've explained in the past, not going to go into it now. Torah is the greatest chesed because Torah keeps the world going, and if there's no world, there's no other chesed. Any other chesed is very specific. This is generally keeps the world going. Torah is the greatest chesed you can do. Okay. There's a Yushalmi that says the flip side of that. It says there are three aveiras that a person is punished in this world, and akeren kayem eslam abah, and in the next world too. And what are they? Gili arayis, immorality, shvichas damim, murder, and avodah zarah, idolatry. Idolatry, adultery, murder. The lashon hara keneged kulam. And lashon hara is equal to all of them. So, first of all, you have to understand, if lashon hara is equal to gili arayis, shvichas damim, zarah, it should be that yoharig v'yavar. If any of those aveiras, somebody puts a gun to your head, and says, kill so-and-so or I'll kill you. Be over Gili Arayis with so-and-so or I'll kill you. Right? Serve idolatry or I'll kill you. You have to be killed. So somebody puts a gun to your head and says, go tell so-and-so Lashon Hara about so-and-so. You should have to be killed. And it's not true. Nobody holds that Lashon Hara is Yoharig Valyavar. In that kind of situation, you can go say to Lashon Hara. So if Lashon Hara is Keneged Kulam, why doesn't it have the halacha that it's Yoharig Valyavar? One thing. Secondly, why is Lashon Hara worse than Gili Arayis, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah? I understand why Talmud Torah is better than all these other mitzvahs. Why is Lashon Hara worse than all those mitzvahs? The second thing that we'll discuss is there's two kaparas for Lashon Hara. They're in the Beis HaMikdash. There was the me'il, which made noise. So the noise of the me'il was mechaper on people who spoke Lashon Hara. And then there was the ketores. The ketores was mechaper also on Lashon Hara. So Gemara asks, what do you need two kaparas for? Gemara said, one is Lashon Hara shebechashoy, private Lashon Hara, and the other one is Lashon Hara shebechol, public Lashon Hara. The only problem is the place that we learn that private Lashon Hara, the Ketores is Mechaper, is the following case. The Jewish people came after Korach was killed. They came and they complained to Moshe and Aaron, Atem Amitem Esam Hashem, you killed these people. You caused their death. That was open Lashon Hara. And yet the Ketores is Mechaper, not the Me'il. So if Lashon Hara Shebechashoy means private, hidden Lashon Hara, the case we're learning it from doesn't fit that. So what does that mean? What is Lashon Hara Shebekol? What's Lashon Hara Shebechashoy? Why is the Ketores a Kapara? Why is the Me'il a Kapara? And if Lashon Hara is so terrible, it's equal to Gimel Averos, why isn't it Yoharig Valyavar? And what does that mean? I mean, Lashon Hara is a bad thing, but why is it worse than these cardinal Averas that you have to give your life for? So Mirtz Hashem, you have 2 weeks to think about it, and Mirtz Hashem will be back the third week of the Shir, go back to the Nordens then, and we'll continue from where we left.